Visit Plain Ridge Park Casino this spring for all the playoff hoops and hockey action and the return of baseball. They've got the biggest screens, the best food and drink, plus they're giving away Penn Cash bonuses and prizes to Penn Play Rewards members. Not a member? Join today by downloading and registering for the Penn Play app from the App Store. Unlock all the fun, including a chance to win up to $2,000 in Penn Cash. All this and more. Make Plain Ridge Park Casino your spring sports viewing headquarters. Must be 21 plus. Play it smart from the start. Live chat at GameSenseMA.com. Hope is here. 800-327-5050 or GamblingHelplineMA.org.
It's TNR.
Heard you like to party.
On 98.5 The Sports Hub.
I mean, that's not the way human beings act.
Follow these guys on Twitter.
At Toucher and Rich.
Boy, did Twitter explode.
.985 The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. And Rich, every year we get emailed a survey. I'm not sure. It's apparently lots of people participate in it. It's a New England survey. I'm not positive why it's done. Or
you know what? Call us if you took this.
617-779-0985. Have you participated in this survey?
This seems like to be... Okay, because... This has a lot of questions. Like, who's taking time to do that? Are they paying you?
Well, if they're paying people, they're paying a lot of money because they do have a huge group of people. And consistently in this thing, we are not well-liked.
Well, you said it best yesterday. It's like the lower we are in the list, usually the better our ratings.
That is a coincidence that does tend to happen. But if you look at the reach of this thing and if you take it, literally, I mean, we are not very high on people's radar. Certainly at the station, we are very far behind.
So it is.
Neither one of us individually is one of like the top like 10 personalities in Boston.
It is interesting. It's funny. It's like, you know, if we do okay, although I don't think we've ever really done like really well this thing.
I think I've one time been like seventh.
I can't even. You know what? To be quite honest, I haven't even looked at. I saw where our show was. And
no, but
know.
Then it does personalities, like, and Felger is like 30%.
Yeah, right, right.
And then, which is obviously accurate. I mean, they get great ratings. But I think one time I've been at like 8%.
If anyone did this, 617-779-0985. Hang on. Is that Zoe?
That is Zoe.
All right, let's take him. Right. We got Zoe online.
All right, Zoe. No, this is Chuck.
Hey, what's up, Chuck?
Oh, this is Chuck.
Hey,
hey.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, so I took that survey.
Yes.
I like the show.
Okay.
Do you have a Pete shirt on? Are you running around the building?
No, that's it. He works at NBC Sports Plus. I said he had some problems with the plugs down there.
Yeah, okay. They do indeed.
The midday guys, they got it's all that guy. He unplugs them all the time.
Yeah.
Where's Wallet?
This is like when Randy Moss put on the glasses and pretended to be his cousin. Right. This is Alex's cousin Chuck. The kind of absent-minded researcher. We have so many listeners calling in. That Zolak just gets in right away.
That wasn't Zolak, it was Chuck.
That's right. It was Zolak's cousin.
Could
Chuck.
Be a distant relative.
Wanted to know where Wallach was.
I mean, come on. How about that? We say 617-779-0985. Has anybody taken this poll before? And no, I don't know who's taking it. It says it's more than 16,000 New England residents, 43% in Massachusetts.
16,000?
Yes. That's what it says.
A large group.
Yeah.
And it's like, what, 50 questions or something?
It's way more than 50 questions.
Way, way more. I mean, like revolution questions.
Dude, it might be 150 questions.
That's deep.
Hang on, let me see. How many pages is this thing?
So if you're paying people, like say you're
maybe
paying
it's
people.
That mall thing. Like when you're walking through the mall and they have those guys with the iPads. Excuse me, sir. Do you have time for a quick few questions? And they just draw you in.
It's odd. I have not been to a mall in 20 years.
Right. I used to do those things all the time for cash.
Yeah.
I would do them all the time. I was on like,
I just let them take
list.
Blood.
Really?
Yeah. Just they're like, hey, let's try this out on you.
I used to get called about once every 3 months to go to some focus group about cereal, about underwear, about alcohol. And I would always, for some reason, I was writing all the demos. I knew how to answer the question so I could go in and actually, like, you know, make money talking about soccer balls. I love soccer. Played all the time.
A medical study, experimental study once for money.
You were?
I would have much rather have been doing your mall survey.
What did you do?
Yeah, what was the study?
Oh, it had all to do with testosterone. I had to rub some gel on myself every day and then over the course of like 6 weeks see what effect it had on me.
Now, did it shrink your nuts?
No. It didn't, but when I went off it, I did get hot flashes, so that was fun. I know what those are like.
How much did they pay you to do that?
It was like $1,000 over 6 weeks, and I had to go into the office once a week to provide samples.
How large was your stack of waivers?
Samples?
No, not samples of that. Okay. Not samples of that, just other samples. I'm sorry, how much was what?
How large was the stack of waivers you had to sign?
It was pretty significant. It was pretty significant.
Do you know the director, Robert Rodriguez?
Yes.
Okay, he's done, like, he did Sin City, Desperado, a bunch of movies. And he wrote his first film, El Mariachi, while he was part of a science experiment for 3 months, where he had to live in a house and basically be sensory deprived.
Ooh.
He just was like, for hours he would have to put stuff in his eyes and his ears, and then he wasn't able to leave the house. He was basically stuck in a house and monitored for, like, I think it was 3 months, and he got, I think it was like $5,000 to do it. But during that time, he was able to write his first screenplay.
I had a guy that used to be an intern on my show in Atlanta who's now on a syndicated show in Los Angeles that's not good. And he's the best part of it. And he is a Mensa member.
Yeah.
And went to Georgia Tech. So his sperm is in really high demand.
Oh.
And so he's made, like, you know, $10,000 in sperm. And we called his parents on the air and told them that, like, you know, he had given all these samples out, and they just were like, no. Like, no, yeah, it's real. Like, he has.
Oh, that's terrible. I mean, imagine being a parent and finding that out, though.
Well, and imagine being him, and, you know, he was young. He was probably, like, 22 years old, 23 years old. So now he's, you know, in his late 30s. So can you, or mid-30s, can you imagine that at some point you might run into someone who's, like, attractive and younger than you, and it could be
stop.
Your daughter?
Ah, yeah, wow.
That is a...
No,
it's a nightmare
happen.
Scenario.
It could. I'm not saying it couldn't.
Like, I think he has 4 kids. I think that it's successfully been implanted and a birth has happened with 4 people.
You're saying it's like an old boy situation?
Well, no. This is happenstance. Like,
okay,
just nothing happens, but okay. You just meet someone and you go, oh, that's an attractive person. And it turns out that you didn't know, but it's that it's your daughter, your son, or whatever.
Have you ever been a science experiment? 617-779-0985.
Let's not push things.
That I would like to know.
The phone's not ringing off the hook today.
So it was 16,000 people, and once again, not one call, not one tweet of someone who took the poll. 43% live in Massachusetts, 26% live in New Hampshire, 10% live in Rhode Island, 9% live in Connecticut, and 8% live in Maine, 4% live in Vermont. And they said that 75% of the respondents were male, 91% are between the ages of 18 and 54, and the polling took place between August 9th and August 20th. Well, they turned around the results pretty quick. But, I mean, once again...
Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, they just finished it. So the one thing about this, though, is because of the time it's taken, like, almost every single category leans very heavy on the Red Sox.
Yeah.
Always does. It's like the number one broadcaster. It's always like, well, you know, it's Dave O'Brien. And, well, Dennis Eckersley, because he kicks a little ass.
Yeah.
But, you know, everything skews that way. But there are some kind of interesting things that were in there as far as the teams were concerned. Favorite team? The Patriots are at 47%. However, last year, they were a lot higher. And I know that this Celtics leapfrogged the Bruins for the first time in, like, 5 years.
That's not surprising.
Which isn't surprising. Which team's leadership has done the best job in the most recent season? Bill Belichick at 42%, which is down from 77% last year. Which I don't think Bill Belichick really done much of anything this past offseason that you can really applaud him for.
His name's Bill Belichick.
What's that? His name is Bill Belichick.
Just, I think it's instinctual just to click on his name.
Uh-huh. Then it goes Danny Ainge and Dave Dombrowski, both tied for second at 25%. Cam Neely down at 6%. And then for people who know who Brian Biello is, he has 2%. So there you go. Who's writing that down? Oh, yeah, the guy from The Revolution did a great job.
Well, some of these are not multiple choice. Some of these, it says, are...
You have to write down the names. Yeah.
So, I mean, think about that. If there's like 150 questions and some of them are not multiple choice, like where you have to like write something in.
Mm-hmm. Coaches most admired. Bill Belichick dropped from 75% last year to 45% this year.
Wow.
After the offseason. He's still pretty big, but Brad Stevens jumped 14 to 26%, and Alex Cora just showed up at 20. So Bruce Cassidy, only 4% as far as being the coach most admired. Belief that the team is changing for the better. You had to choose which one. The Red Sox got 75%. Celtics got 70%, Bruins 43%, Revolution 26%, and check this out, the Patriots at only 19%.
Yeah.
But how can you look at what happened in the offseason and think this team got any better?
No, they didn't, and that's an accurate, yeah, they didn't, even comparatively to the other team.
If you had to pick the team most likely to win a championship the soonest, who would you choose?
I would choose the Patriots.
See, I would have chose the Red Sox, and the Red Sox right now are number one. They have 51%, Patriots at 36%. Celtics at 8, Bruins at 4, Revolution at 1%.
Yeah, I'm not positive that the Red Sox carry this through the playoffs. All right, we are going to talk to Jose Baez, the attorney for Aaron Hernandez. He's got a book about the man coming out, it came out yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
This portion of Toucher and Rich is brought to you by Acura Peabody.
Toucher and Rich, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Aaron Hernandez, but it looks like he's having a hard time getting anywhere. It sounds like we can check in now with Steve Cooper. He's the one in the white shirt there. So, Cooper, I know you're standing right there with Aaron Hernandez. What can you tell us?
Basically, I can tell you that he left the stadium just a couple of minutes ago, and he pulled into this Gulf gas station here. And as you now see, it's his Audi SUV. And he put the nozzle into his gas tank, and he started to fill up. He went inside. And just as he was getting into his car, I tried to ask him a question. He shut the door, and now he's sitting. And so, okay, hey, Aaron, can you just ask him, just tell us something?
Well, clearly our audio isn't too clear, but you can just see a horde of media there surrounding the Pats tight end as he gets into his SUV and drives away.
98.5 Sports Sober Toucher and Rich. That was the great Steve Cooper, really Johnny on the spot, letting us know that Aaron Hernandez was filling his car up and then basically crapping the rest of the whole thing away. Hook hates him. All right. Jose Baez was lawyer for Aaron Hernandez. He has a new book out that came out yesterday called Unnecessary Roughness Inside the Trial and Final Days of Aaron Hernandez. Mr. Baez, Esquire, thank you for joining us, sir.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Okay, so how does this...
I think Shanna should have filled that car up with a little bit more gas, that's for sure.
Right, that's right. He could have amscrayed out of that thing. All right, so how does this work if you're someone's attorney and then you come out with a book? Because you think of something about it like attorney-client privilege and things like that. How does this whole thing work legally?
Well, I couldn't write it without his consent, and this is one of the things that we discussed during the jury deliberations that we were going to do, because we felt really confident about the verdict, and we were now focusing on the Odin Lloyd appeal, and we thought if people understood him a little bit better, that perhaps in a close call, it might assist him later on down the road. So that was one of the things that we kind of discussed. Plus, he really wanted people to hear his version and the other side of the story. And that's what I think this book is. It's more of, it is really the other side of the Aaron Hernandez story that no one's ever heard before.
But he was found guilty of first-degree murder and, you know, sentenced to life in prison. Isn't this book the very definition of profiting from a murder?
Not at all. I can tell you this. I'm taking the money that I made off of this book, and it's being set up for a college fund for Aviel, his daughter. So you don't get rich writing books. I've got my own. I've got a day job, and I do okay. So this was really something that I felt I had to do because there's a lot out there that people don't know. And all that's out there right now is the same storyline. And I thought it's important. I thought it would be important mainly for the people who were close to Aaron to have that other side out there.
So 100% of the profit from this book is going to Aaron Hernandez's daughter?
To a college fund, yes.
Okay, 100% of the money is going to her?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, the proceeds of what I made, you know, I had a collaborator. There's also an agent. They get their cut, all that stuff. But what I'm not making any money off of it, period.
All right. When you say that there's only one storyline out there, isn't that storyline the fact that he was convicted of shooting Odin Lloyd to death, first-degree murder? Isn't that the storyline?
You know, I can tell you there are hundreds and even thousands of people who get convicted of crimes every day who are innocent. That doesn't necessarily tell the whole story. There's human life is a lot more complex than just a conviction. And there's numerous flaws in our system. And I don't come out in the book and I say he's innocent of the Odin Lloyd murder. I think I should put that out on the table first. But I do have my doubts, and I express those doubts, and I lay them out where they lie in the case. And I think the Boston case really puts the Odin Lloyd case into a lot better perspective, so you can kind of understand what was going on in Aaron's life at the time and kind of make sense of the whole story.
Well, what did they have wrong? Like, what did the jury not know in the Odin Lloyd case that you say that you believe could have changed their minds? The doubts that you have, what are those doubts?
Well, one of the biggest, well, first of all, a lot of people don't realize is that he was prosecuted under the joint venture theory, which means the prosecutor had no idea who pulled the trigger. So they proceeded on this joint venture theory, and all they really had to prove up was that he had committed overt acts in furtherance of this crime, like supplying the gun or getting the gun, which I think they successfully did through the cameras that showed that Aaron went home and got a gun and came back and bought the gun. But what they didn't know is that Aaron went everywhere with a gun because Alexander Bradley was threatening to kill him at the time. And because this was after the Florida shooting where he felt nixed by Aaron. So that never came into the trial. And, I don't blame his first lawyers for doing that, because it's pretty much picking your poison at that stage. They made a decision, and you kind of have to live with your strategic decisions. But that puts a lot of it into perspective, that he had these guys around him because there was someone who was threatening to kill him, who was fully capable of doing it, and he had seen this person. He had known that this person was a very violent person and had the ability to kill him and his family. That takes us to the issue when Aaron had requested to be traded from the Patriots, and that trade was denied.
Okay, well, let's get to that, because, Jose, you write in your book that Aaron Hernandez went to Bill Belichick, said that he feared for his safety, and Bill Belichick said, you said he was incensed by the idea and that he should talk to the director of security. But then you say, had they taken it seriously, how would things have worked out? And then later on, you talk about when Belichick and Robert Kraft released Aaron Hernandez as soon as he was arrested, and you put, you're innocent until proven guilty in this country, but not in that organization. So which one did you want? Did you want him gone and not with the Patriots and not around the organization, you seem to contradict yourself there when it comes to placing any blame on the Patriots.
I don't think it's contradictory at all. I do think, you know, when I say that, I'm not blaming the Patriots for anything that happened.
It sounds like it. I mean, your quote was, had they taken it seriously, how would things have worked out?
All right, let me finish what I'm saying. Here's the thing. Things happen in our lives that takes us in different directions. What would have resulted if he had been traded to Seattle? Who knows? And that's what I'm saying.
But how does that get him out of trouble? It seems to me like you're saying that it was the proximity to these people that caused him to murder someone, but it seems if things got that serious that, you know, people can travel to Seattle. I mean, how does that get him out of all
this?
No.
I never said that he murdered anyone in this case.
Sure.
What I'm saying is that if he's away from certain individuals, that perhaps maybe he starts his life and takes his life in a different direction, or perhaps these things die down. I don't know. And, you know, I don't have a crystal ball, but I do know this. We make certain decisions every day, and we take our turns in different directions, and they affect other things that occur to us. And that's really all I meant. Kind of like, you know, the old movie Sliding Doors, where what happens if you catch the train versus not catching the train. That was it.
So it's now, just kind of a universal concept. It's not really it's not unique to Aaron Hernandez.
Correct. Correct. That's exactly what I mean.
But that's
when we make certain decisions, it takes us in a different direction.
But that seems unfair because you can't just say it goes with everything because you're talking about a murder here. And when you say, well, if the Patriots had traded him, well, then you're implying that there would have been no murder. Whereas, how about the blame is rested on the guy who committed the murder? You know, it almost would be easier to just say, well, then don't murder anybody if you don't want the situation to turn out the way it was.
I think you're completely misunderstanding what I'm saying here, because I never said he committed that murder. In fact, neither did the prosecutor in Bristol County. What he said is that under the joint venture theory, he's liable for that murder. Oh. The prosecutor, hold on, hear me out. The prosecutor, who has the most extensive knowledge of the case, didn't have enough evidence to say Aaron Hernandez pulled that trigger. So how can you? You can't.
Okay, but wasn't Aaron Hernandez there with Carlos Ortiz, Ernest Wallace, the two guys he said, come with me, guys? Didn't Aaron Hernandez provide a gun? So even if Aaron Hernandez did not physically pull the trigger, he put together the group of three guys who were there with Odin Lloyd in a parking lot, and he's the one who, you know, project managed the murder, even if he didn't in fact fire the bullet. I mean, aren't you
responsible for his death?
Yeah. Aren't you drawing a very fine line saying that he's innocent of murder because he didn't physically pull the trigger when he brought these guys together and masterminded the actual crime?
No, I'm saying neither. And under the law, mere presence at a crime does not make you liable of murder. That when you deal with mere presence and joint venture, there's a fine line under the law that you have to be able to prove certain facts. And what I'm saying, I'm not saying in any way, shape, or form, I'm throwing out the facts and the law and letting people decide on their own.
Well, the facts are that he was found guilty of the slaying of Odin Lloyd.
You've obviously made your decision.
No. The law has made their decision. They found him guilty in the slaying of Odin Lloyd.
Yeah, and the law finds people guilty every day of crimes they did not commit.
Do you concede that he's the one who brought these four men together, including himself, and that he provided a weapon and that ultimately one of those men was killed?
Well, first of all, I can't throw in the weapon because...
All right, fine. Ignore the weapon. There was a weapon there. Do you concede that he brought...
If you ask me a question, you got to let me answer it.
Okay.
You're talking over me. So my point is yes, but bringing people together isn't a crime. Meeting up with people isn't a crime. Being merely present at a crime isn't a crime. There are finite details in the law that set up liability. I think the fact that the context of what was happening in Aaron's life with the Bradley situation not coming out in the trial was an important factor that I think influenced the jury in another direction.
Okay, then I will use your logic. Had Aaron Hernandez not been with Odin Lloyd that night, how would have things worked out?
I'm sorry, if he had not been with Odin Lloyd?
I'm using the logic that you had about the Patriots. Had he been traded, how would have things worked out? Had Aaron Hernandez not been with Odin Lloyd that night, how would have things worked out?
I don't know. I don't have a crystal ball.
If he had not texted Carlos Ortiz and Ernest Wallace and said, come to Massachusetts, how would things have worked out?
So under your theory, no one should text anybody to meet up or anything like that.
Aaron Hernandez shouldn't bring two guys together and then they go pick up a third guy and then shoot that third guy. That's my theory. That's what I think shouldn't happen.
I would agree with that. I would agree with that. But when you decide to hold somebody liable for murder and put them in life in prison, you should have the evidence to back it up. Now, in this situation, they went under a joint venture theory, and I just believe that the case was tried differently than how I would have tried it. And that's it. That's all I'm saying. Now, whether you would sit on that jury and vote him guilty or somebody else would, that's up for you to decide. But I have my doubts. First of all, I share the prosecutor's opinion that I have my doubts that Aaron Hernandez pulled the trigger, period. So, you know, under that, that's all I write in the book. I don't get in there and say he should have been innocent of this and this and that. Other than the Boston case, I can't make that assessment because I wasn't intimately involved. But I do know a little bit more than the average person about that case. But I was, because I was able to examine the files.
All right, we're talking to Jose Baez. He was the lawyer for Aaron Hernandez. His book, Unnecessary Roughness, Inside the Trial and Final Days of Aaron Hernandez, is out now. The most egregious thing you say in your book is that Tim Tebow was willing to quit the University of Florida football team if Aaron Hernandez was removed. You are confident about that?
Look, I wasn't there.
You have to think that no way Tebow's leaving that program. For Aaron Hernandez?
First of all, I do know that they were close. I got that from multiple sources. And I know that players, these young kids, they stick together at various times. Tebow didn't want Aaron off the team. Do you believe that? That you've got an all-pro, that you've got a tight end that's an All-American?
I would not want him.
And you're throwing the ball to him?
Yeah, but I'm not leaving the program, especially if I'm Tim Tebow, and I'm not leaving the program.
Who's to say he would have gone through with that?
Right.
Or whether that was a figure of speech, or whether that was... Basically, I say he went to bat for Aaron.
Okay, fair enough.
That's really it.
All right.
I wouldn't call that egregious.
Okay, what was... Tebow's a weird story. What was Aaron Hernandez's life in jail? You have some... things that kind of go against what the family had said.
His life in jail was a difficult one. I mean, as many people experience, I think when you go in, when someone who is a celebrity or an athlete goes to prison, they're a target, especially someone who's big like Aaron. People may want to try him at times. And Aaron was a fighter. He got into trouble quite a bit in jail. That was something that did not mesh well with him, and it's not surprising in any way, shape, or form.
Now, you cast doubt that he committed suicide in jail.
You backtracked on that a little bit, right?
No, not at all. I believe that he did commit suicide. So what happened, and this is important, and I relay this out in the book, when I was on my way to the airport to come back to Boston for after he had committed suicide, I was asked by TMZ, you know, what's going on? What do you think? And I simply said, we're going to investigate this death. We want to see the evidence that supports that he committed suicide. I never said he was murdered, but of course, TMZ doing what they do, they threw out there, lawyer thinks it could be murder. And everybody threw that out there. And all I kept saying is, we're not going to accept the official story until we investigate the death. And that's exactly what we did. But I have zero doubt that he committed suicide. I mean, if you look at all of the evidence put together, I was there during his autopsy. I saw the marks on his neck. I was with Boston University when they reached their conclusions. I've discussed things with them. I've read all the reports. He had a severe brain disease, and I believe that that's a direct link to CTE.
All right. So you believe CTE is the reason that he murdered people? Or that that he was found guilty and found in these situations.
I don't know where you get 1 + 1 = 5.
Well, no, you just said. I mean, you just talked about CTE is the way that he.
I said that CTE. There's a direct link to suicide.
Oh, okay. I understand what you're saying. I understand what you're saying.
It's suicide because of the CTE.
So you also
multiple players have done it before.
You also cast a doubt on whether or not Hernandez supposedly shot Bradley in the face. And I know that you've got your alternate theories about, you know, what happened with the club. And do you believe that Aaron Hernandez did anything wrong?
Of course. I mean, you know, and in the book, I lay out quite a few things that, you know.
What's the worst thing you believe he did?
I don't sit here and judge people, and I certainly don't judge my past clients.
According to the law, what's the worst thing you believe he did? Like, what's the most criminal? What's the worst criminal act you believe that he partook in?
Well, if the evidence, when we discussed the Odin Hoyt case, you have to look at specifically what the extent of his involvement was, whether he falls under the joint venture theory to sustain that conviction or not.
And do you think he does?
Probably the most. I have what I say specifically is I have a reasonable doubt. I really do.
Okay, but now I'm asking you not under a court of law. Do you, as just a guy in the street, knowing everything that you know, Do you think that Aaron Hernandez was guilty in the Odenloyd case?
It's kind of funny. You're saying just a guy on the street, but then you want to use a legal term and say he's guilty. Did he pull the trigger? I don't think he did.
Okay. No. Was he guilty? Was he there?
Was he partially responsible
for
his death?
There? Was he there when Odenloyd died?
Yes, he was.
Okay.
Yes, he was.
Okay. Well, so, I didn't get to.
I mean, you know, fellas, I can tell you this. You know, these are all. This young man lived a complex life, partly due to his own fault and partly due to circumstances. It's a fascinating story, and I'll tell you this. The day I left the prison after first meeting Aaron, and I spent 8 hours with him discussing his life story and where he had been and where he had gone, I walked out of there thinking to myself, this is the most incredible story I've ever heard. And it's unfortunate. At that time, I did not believe it would ever see the light of day. Unfortunately, we are where we're at today, and he's passed. He leaves a 4-year-old daughter behind who's now 5, with tons of people saying, caring their opinions about him that she would have to read about someday. I just really wanted to throw a different side out there and facts that I know are never discussed out there, to try and give people the complete picture. You can draw your own conclusions after reading the book. And if you hold on to them, hey, that's up to you. I respect that.
All right. Well, Jose Baez, the book is Unnecessary Roughness, Inside the Trial and Final Days of Aaron Hernandez. That is out now. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys. I enjoyed it.
All right. Thank you.
Take care.
I didn't get to ask my question.
Well, was that the... It just seemed wildly inappropriate.
I asked how life in jail was for him, and I could have followed it up, because that's one of the things that's like one of the bombshells in the book, is that he goes against what the family had said.
About him being secretly gay?
Yes.
Was he secretly gay?
I got a hook over there convulsing. Wanted to ask my question.
Well, I mean, first of all,
set up the question, and then I wanted to follow through. It's good enough for the Globe to highlight it.
That's fine. I was driven crazy by the fact that this guy was like,
well,
he could have been there. He could have not pulled the trigger. Just tell me, did the guy do the murder or not?
My friend's in the other room, nodding his head, saying, "You go, Fred. You should have been able to ask that question."
Was he secretly gay?
All right.
Well, I just think that I want someone to look into whether or not that is 100% true, that all of the money that he's getting from this book is going to Aaron Hernandez's
daughter.
Well, you're
talking to like a rock star defense attorney, so I have a feeling he's crossed his T's and dotted his I's. I mean, the guy obviously has had great success. He got Casey Anthony off the hook. All right, we will be back. We're running very late. Here are the headlines.
98.5. Toucher and Rich.
Now it's time to get to the stuff that we couldn't get to. It's the Stack.
98.5, the Sports Hub. We are Toucher and Rich.
I like seeing Marshall Hook all fired up.
Yeah.
Fired up Hook? Not a bad thing.
Got in the way of my groundbreaking question, but nonetheless, he was visibly agitated.
I couldn't answer a question.
Well, he's a defense attorney.
But
you did a good job. You did a good job.
Thank you.
I like that you were that hyped up, but I mean, he is a defense attorney. He was very good at his job. I mean, he's not going to, you know, be forthcoming, but you asked him the questions that needed to be asked.
Yeah, I mean, it was...
And he had to go around in circles. Now, we didn't get the news if he was secretly gay,
was he secretly gay?
A question I set up by saying, what was his life like in prison?
You didn't ask it.
Because I got everyone jumping in about the hypocrisies of this and this.
Well, there's a million things about life in prison. You should have just said, hey, I have a question for you.
Okay, so you're like, well, so why'd you kill Golden Lloyd? Was he gay in prison? Like, that's awkward.
Okay. Well, you could have waved us down.
So, no, I'm not going to. You guys were doing a good job. I'm not going to do it. I'm not upset. I'm not upset. The guy earlier who I was upset about apparently works here. I'm not upset at him either. I'm not upset with anyone.
Yeah, we didn't realize he was one of our own.
I apologize. I thought he worked for NBC. I didn't know he worked here. Everyone's very angry with me. But the, which is hysterical because I'll just leave. But what is interesting about what I was going to do is I softened it with the Tebow question.
Mm-hmm.
Then I said, what was life like in jail? And then I was going to go, zoopee!
Right. Was he secretly gay?
And that's...
We actually brought a drum for Marshall to hit to completely reenact that sound clip.
Yeah. All right. So while we have a couple minutes, Rich, let's explore the life of Dennis Eckersley.
Oh, yeah. You got the new one?
Yeah. He's starting to come out of his shell.
By the way, real quick, I just have to read, because we're getting a bunch of response from the interview, and most of it's pretty positive, not to pat ourselves on the back, but there was one we got, and it was a tweet to Jose Baez, and it said, thank you for going on Touch and Rich and giving insight on who the real Aaron Hernandez was. He gets a bad rap around here. And to that, I just want to tweet him back and say, he was found guilty of murder. Like in a court of law.
Or
I don't think that's really a bad rap. No,
or at the very least, he was associating with people. Even if you believe he didn't commit murder or wasn't involved in the murder, he was associating with people that indeed... I mean, the guy's dead and he was murdered.
Right.
They're associates of Aaron Hernandez.
So if you want to call that a bad rap, then I would say, okay, sure. I guess that's the definition, yeah.
Yeah, if I'm hanging out with people who are committing murders of people I know the day of the murder, yes, I would assume that that's... There's not a lot of... I'm sure that there were parts of his life that were wonderful.
Probably, but that's...
Not that a particular one. Anyway,
so
enough about the negativity out in the world, and let's get to one thing that's fantastic. That, of course, is Dennis Eckersley. We've been having some fun about Dennis Eckersley today. Mm-hmm. He's trying to get out there to the people. Mm-hmm. He's like, look, my life has changed. You know, I'm not the same humdinger I was, you know, 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I still rock the cut and the stash. I still drive the rig.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, maybe let's get back a little bit. Now, Dave O'Brien loves nothing more than to throw water on the flames of Eckersley's hot rod. Well, while you were playing with Tonka toys, I was over there in the real McCoys. So.
Oh, he got smoked.
So here's Dennis Eckersley.
So this is from last night. Now, they had just had, you know, because they're doing the Jimmy Fund Marathon. And they had just had one of the patients from Dana-Farber in, and he'd left. And that was just Dave O'Brien and Dennis Eckersley in the booth. And first of all, by the way, whoever this guy was, and he seemed to be like, you know, like someone who would, you know, be of the age that would listen to our show, I give this guy a thumbs up. All right? Okay. So this is them discussing the patient from Dana-Farber who was just in there with him.
So what was it Bruce needed to ask?
So I'm thinking he's going to ask me a baseball question, right? I have two questions, he said, to ask you. I'm thinking, you know, how was it to be in the big leagues? Whatever. He says, how do you stay so tan? This kid's asking me. I said, I'm a professional tanner, bronzer, I told him. Isn't that something?
You know he's got like a tanning bed from the 70s.
Sure, it's
that, like runs on plutonium.
Right, it's like making his skin like he's going to die like 10 years earlier than he should because of that.
It was worth it, baby.
Wow,
that's when he sees how bronze he is when he walks out.
Yeah, you know if he took off his clothes, he would just have a white G-string mark.
Oh man,
yeah. I'm surprised he doesn't have the raccoon eyes because it's with those little plastic things.
Yeah,
over the front.
Well, listen. All I do is put a patch over my little guy, and then I'm in there and I get au naturel.
Yeah, we told you.
I would say that the guy on TV told us you had one of those things.
That's right. I just sometimes like to dangle my tootsies in the pool.
The 70s, man. The 70s were happening.
Yes, they were happening.
This the Eck pool is always tops optional.
Wow.
What was the name of the secret club that he used to hang out in?
Oh, man, I can't remember.
Tang Time or something like that?
Yeah, Tang Time. It was at the bottom of the Kowloon. Woo! Right. M1, baby. Let's light them up. All right, Rich, it's time to... get going, so we have to play our exit song.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I'm a nice man. Yeah, I'm a nice man.
This song makes me sad because it means we're leaving.
Yeah, it's real sad. It's the greatest song of all time. I get to hear this song and leave?
It's like Christmas.
The greatest thing ever. All right, that'll do it for us, everyone. Thank you for listening. Have a fantastic day. It's supposed to stop raining about 5. Plenty of time to get to the JCC pool before it closes at 7:30. Bye.